Hello, Cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 119 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, a conversation with Tobin Ortenblad. I've been trying to catch up with Tobin for a while, and we finally sat down, had a great conversation. He was here in Washington, D.C., hanging out for a couple days between Roanoke, Virginia, and traveling today up to Rochester, where he will be competing with the rest of the top cyclocrossers in North America, and some from Europe as well, at Rochester Cyclocross. We will have full coverage of that race coming up, well, you know, after it happens. But for now, it was awesome sitting down with Tobin, and we're going to get to that conversation in just a minute. Before we do, I want to talk to you about three things. First off, CX's Boss is back as a sponsor of the show. Great response from all of you last time, but if you missed out, there's still time to get 15% off at everything at cxisboss.com. Go to cxisboss, cxisboss.com/radio. Put in the coupon code radio and you get 15% off. And you may ask, 15% off of what? Well, I'm going to tell you. This is the place you go for your FMB tubular tires. You need these tires. They are gonna be the advantage over your competition. I talk a lot about in the clinics that we do that we are able to make you faster without you having to be any fitter and through technique. Well, another way to get faster without being any fitter is having the proper tires for your bike. FMB is a great choice. You can get them at CX's Boss. You get the Super Muds. It's one of the best mud tires ever made. The Slalom SSC. That's something that wide angle podium partner Katie Compton helped develop. It's a fast rolling, all purpose tire. You know, we looked at something like last week. It's always good to have, if you can afford it, to have more than one set of wheels so you can change tires for changing conditions. So like last week, for instance, down in Roanoke during the men's elite race, it was dry before, and a lot of those guys had on something like a Slalom SSC. All of a sudden, rain, the sky's open, rain comes down, everybody's grabbing their mud tires, Super Muds going on the bike. You know, if you have that selection, this is a great place that you can do it. Two sets of wheels, you're set for the season with those FMB tires. CX's Boss also has water bottles, accessories, shirts, a lot of cool stuff. Go check out the site. Go to cxsboss.com/radio. Put in the coupon code radio and you're all set. And then, you know, tell them you did it on Twitter and social media, and just shout out to Crosshairs Radio that's where you found out about this. And then we can get other sponsors too, like these guys. Charm City Cyclocross and DCCX are joining forces to bring you the Parkway CX Trophy presented by Union Craft Brewery. This is a new series, UCI series, also categories available for everybody in here. We want you to be a part of this. Attention spans are shrinking. We know that. It is a fact. It's science. You can't sit there and do a 14 race series. You're going to lose interest. It's the MTV. It's the Insta. It's the Twitter. It's the Snapchat generation. People's attention spans are like, whoop. They've contracted, and that goes for racing too. So we've created a four race series. What you have is the 2 days of Charm City. You take a week off, you figure things out, you figure what you need to do differently, and then you come back for DCCX for races 3 and 4, put them all together. The person who wins that is gonna get an amazing jersey from Pactimo, and everybody else is getting prizes. And we're also gonna stage by, you know, at least part of you, by series standing. So series matters. It's something to get invested with. It is the most important series you're going to be in this year, and it's only four races. So make sure you're out there. Go register for Charm City. Go register for DCCX. You can do that at bikereg.com. Just search Charm City. Put in all your info. Go back. Search DCCX. You are done. You're all set. We will see you October 6th and 7th for Charm City, October 20 and 21 for DCCX, year one of the Parkway CX Trophy, presented by Union Craft Brewery. Okay, last thing I need to tell you about. which you know I'm telling you about, is the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. It's ending, our drive is ending, but there's still time for you all to get in on it. And this is what you're going to get if you contribute to the network for shows like this one, Crosshairs Radio, like the Slow Ride Podcast, Bike Shop CX, Consummate Athlete Podcast. Those are the big four. Those are the ones that you that we are putting stuff out every week or every other week, and really deserve to have your sponsorship. All the other shows are amazing as well. Get in there, become a member, choose who you want to support. For $10 a month, you'll be at the superstar level. That includes bonus content, buttons, and an all-new sticker sheet. $15 a month, you also get a splash-proof phone pouch, which is always good. I know they say that those iPhone 10s are waterproof, but I don't believe it. You need a splash-proof pouch. Yeah, $20, you get a fidget spinner. We got these fidget spinners are the best. I believe there's ceramic bearings in there. They're not, but they feel like they should be, or could be, or are. But $20 a month gets you the fidget spinner, splash-proof phone sheet, all-new sticker sheet, buttons. I can't wait to see the buttons. And then bonus content, like everything else. $35 a month, you get a t-shirt along with that, a Wide Angle Podium t-shirt. All our t-shirts are great. $50 a month, we'll give you an on-air shout-out. Hey, Steve, thanks for giving $50 a month. See, that could have been you, even if your name's not Steve. I'll change it for you. Two different WAP t-shirts. Circle of Trust mystery guest. Ooh, that's $50 a month. We want to see something out there. I'm going to be shouting out some names. Also, we've set up this year one-time donation, so if you don't want it being deducted from your credit card or PayPal every month, you can do a one-time shot, still be in for all these prizes, assuming that you meet that level. WideAnglePodium.com. Join the network. Join the fun. And now we're going to join Tobin Ortenblad for a conversation about everything under the sun. I really enjoyed talking to him. This was a good talk, and you're going to enjoy it. And we're going to do that right now.
We're here in Washington, D.C. We had Go Cross last weekend. At Rochester coming up. Rochester, traditionally, you know, a very hot race since it's early on. So in D.C., doing a little heat training.
Yeah, in D.C., in between, at least, hanging out. Last weekend was a good start to feeling the heat and whatnot. Hopefully, you can just do some training this week, stay hydrated, keep things where they got to be coming into this next weekend.
Yeah, we talked a little bit after the race this past weekend just about your approach to the season. I'm jumping here, but then I want to... We'll go back from there, but just because it's on my mind. And you were talking about, I just want to just revisit your plan for the season. You know, I mean, last year it seemed like different goals and maybe a longer view this year.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say coming into this season, my coach and I, we did a lot different. Our training was a little different. We did a real base season, which has kind of never really happened, which pushes everything, gets pretty delayed then. You're not really racing until super late in the summer. And then by the time that came around, a couple stage races I was going to do were canceled. So I didn't do those. Specifically North Star Grand Prix was canceled. Then I wasn't out in the Midwest, so I didn't do the Tour of America's Dairyland. So all of a sudden that was like 14 days of racing that I didn't have. And then locally there was some things and there wasn't some things. So I was like, okay, I've built a legit foundation, but I don't know if I have the speed now. I've really only raced four times since cross season ended last year. So coming into the season, yeah, I was a little bit like, man, where the cards going to fall? Am I going to be good enough? Will I be able to ride the front group? So yeah, like I think we mentioned after the race, just being able to be a contender, the same person I always am, felt good. And then, like you said, the longer look of the whole season. I'm going to race till February. I'll go to Europe in December. So if I can come into the season now and be good, then hopefully everything will just keep building and building and building until Worlds, and then just carry all that momentum through the end of the season.
So then you must be pretty happy with this change in Nationals, moving it up to December, because that means only one trip to Europe instead of having to go back and forth.
Yeah, it's ideal for sure. I mean, one, it's ideal because you don't have an awkward void of no domestic UCI racing, which usually we'd have to fill that void by going to Europe. which is rough because you have the big travel before Nationals, which is one of the most important races. So, yeah, with Nationals being early, it's going to be great to just get that done. And then domestic season is totally done. Go to Europe. Make sure you're good for Worlds. And then after that, just carry that momentum. Keep training. Just, you know, depends how motivated you are, where your head's at, where your fitness is at. But be good for Worlds and then, yeah, have fun over there.
I think that, you know, it's a great point that I've been thinking about a lot with this December Nationals is the UCI racing that goes, you know, in the past we get to like the first weekend of November. So it's almost like after Pan Ams, and then there are UCI races out there. And this is, I think, a great opportunity this year for them to finally get the due that they deserve, you know, like a Ruts and Guts and a Hendersonville and, those major Taylor, those types of races, you know, Resolution that maybe didn't get as many people as they should. Maybe they'll show up now since it's great lead up to Nationals.
And it's all in the same part of the country ish. You know, it's not East and West Coast. It's all, seems like it's all kind of drivable. So yeah, you can go. I believe it's, is it Resolution first? Whatever it is, it's kind of a straight line.
Sure.
It'll just take us all the way to Louisville, and then we'll do that. And then
we'll give US Cycling credit for the planning like that. We'll just give them that.
It seems like
we don't have to dig too deep into it.
Okay, I would agree. don't go crazy here.
But let's actually, you know, you talked about missing that time on the road, and that approach really reminds me of more of a Belgian approach to racing cyclocross. And a lot of those guys, you know, some of the folks I've talked to, they even say they look at the Americans and they go, well, they should be over here in the summer racing kermesses, racing our little stage races, because that's how we get ready for cross. And then you look at like North American cyclocross athletes, and maybe not all of them are doing that much on the road. Do you feel like that's beneficial for you going into cross? I know you didn't get as much this year, but just in general.
I think so. I mean, this will be a tell this year. And, you know, we drove from Roanoke to DC, and something my coach and I, Chris McGovern's my coach and my mechanic. So he and I are always doing these things together. And yeah, we talked about, like, you look at all those European guys and they're racing kermesses, they're racing stage races, they're just racing versus, maybe what I did. So we're trying to put it together, like, well, maybe, what if we did just race a ton? Or what if we took a break and stacked some miles? Like, where's that difference coming from in their fitness versus our fitness, you know? And I think we do, as like your body and as an athlete, you probably do need to do a couple years of like that legit base training to have in your legs before you can benefit from doing that much racing and just hold that fitness and strength for a whole year. But I do think the kermesses and the stage racing, I mean, I'm a little jealous that they have those options just there every single weekend to go rip each other's legs off, because I think that's beneficial.
Yeah, and you're still, how old are you?
I'm 23, so Racing Ages here will be 20, Racing Ages 24.
Yeah. See, I think, at least in my head, with a lot of you guys, I put more years on you because we've been watching you race for so long.
Yeah.
So you're just, you know, really just entering the elites, basically.
Totally.
Even though you've been racing there.
Yeah, we have been racing there, but at the same time, it's like we just talked about before we started the podcast, is like, you see Vanderpool, you see Wout, those guys are my age. I mean, Wout and I are the same racing age. Vanderpool's 1 year younger, and those are the head of the cyclocross in the world. So you feel a little bit of, I don't want to say pressure, but like, our age is the age where you need to be killing it. Because
and that's a change. I mean, that's a change in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Like, you look at Musin, he's starting to be a little older now, but he's under 30, you know? Like, it's crazy. Yeah. It's just such a young sport now.
My favorite is Vanderhaar. You know, people are looking at Vanderhaar like over the hill. He's like 26.
So young. Yeah. But they're like, man, maybe he's over his, you know, the peak of the bell curve for the guy. It's just like, wow, that's how it's going to be, huh?
Yeah. So, when did bikes start for you going back?
Bikes started in, I mean, so my neighbor rode for the Yeti World Cup downhill team. So he and a bunch of the neighborhood kids, we all rode bikes. We chased around just dirt jumps and downhill, though. No racing.
Yeah. Tell me just a little bit of like the culture that you grew up in, like in that California, you know, in that area.
Yeah. So being a neighbor with him, knowing all his friends, it was pretty much downhill, and I would say jumping more than downhill. You know, we got the skate parks, the bike parks, the dirt jumps. There's Aptos Post Office, everyone knows about. That was like the world-renowned jumps in Santa Cruz. And so that was definitely where things started, and I guess my foundation of riding, and that was kind of, yeah, the culture locally. The older, not older guys, but like my dad and his friends always rode cross-country bikes, but I was not into that at all.
Yeah. How did racing start? Were you starting? Did you get into downhill? Were you doing BMX? Any of that sort of other disciplines?
I did race some. I think I did a couple downhill races. I for sure did that. A couple four cross races. I never did dual slalom. Some jumping competitions. That's not, you know, that's a judged thing, not a race thing. And then in middle school, in eighth grade, I realized I could get out of PE class if I rode with the high school mountain bike team. We have the league in California, the first high school racing league, and NorCal is kind of the pilot league for the whole NICA.
NICA, sure.
So in eighth grade, I'm like, cool, I'll get out of middle school, get out of PE. I can get out of school early every other day, and I'm like, I'll just go mess around with the high school team and do what I do with all my friends, just like mess around and do jumps. So I showed up to practice, and it was like totally not the case. These guys are doing intervals, hill repeats, intervals. I'm like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? You know, like this is not as chill as I thought it would be. And, you know, I showed up in baggies on my, I had a Yeti 4-cross. So this bike is meant for like short travel. It's like a short travel downhill bike,
right. Basically.
Right.
Probably weighed a ton.
And I'm just like, well, I got to be competitive with these guys. I don't want to not win these intervals. So just started there and got super competitive, started racing at the local CCCX races, which is California Bay Area stuff. And yeah, I think I was just so competitive that it just snowballed from there. And then with that high school team, did cross in the winter. I remember I always got second the first year I started racing in cross country. Same kid always beat me. He was untouchable. And then we showed up at the first cyclocross race, and I was on my dad's rigid single speed 29er, had like 180 cranks on it, and I won the junior race, and I was like, okay, this is for me. Like, I liked it. And I don't know, you know, if that was because it was short or because I won it or whatever, but everything just went from there, basically.
Yeah. What I like about what you were just saying, a couple things. One is that it seems like your personality or just inside that competitiveness, it could have been anything.
Yeah, not going to be ball sports. Because yeah, like I said, I was never even close to the top of those events, teams rather. I mean, the last soccer team I was on, I actually got kicked off the last soccer team because I got in a fight at practice. You know, I punched a kid, and it was just like, you know, that's, you can't do that. And, you know, he started it, whatever. We won't get into that. And then baseball, I think the nail in the coffin there was, I was, the last year I played was in Colt League, which is like early middle school. You get to the bigger field and larger distances between bases and whatnot. And I was on the best team in the league because I was friends with all the kids whose dads ran everything. So I got on the best team, which meant I never got to play because I was the worst player.
Right.
You
right,
know, maybe
right.
I was okay. And if I was on a crappy team, I would have been like more mediocre, but I was like the worst. It was like, I got to play because they have to play you and let you bat or they get in trouble, right?
Right.
So you think I quit midseason there. I was like, I don't want to show up to this anymore. I don't want to do this. So that was the end of baseball. Soccer, ended around that. And then cycling really took off, I mean, a year after that or around that time too. I think I just wanted to spend time on the bike, not at the practices.
The other... part of that, how you came up, that I find interesting and I think is really a change that has happened in the last 15 years, maybe even less than that, is the entry point to racing bikes has completely changed. It used to be road was the only way to get into it. And you talk about, you know, the high school mountain bike league, which I think is huge for getting people into it. There's BMS, there's other things. And even, and now what we're seeing is with the popularity of cyclocross is that is like such an easy entry for people to start racing from like juniors up until, you know, you've got guys in their 40s.
Super easy. Yeah. You can have whatever bike. Yeah. The culture is so, it's, you know, infinitely inviting. It's so, so low key. And the races are short and it's not like you're out in the forest somewhere. If you, you know, you don't know how to change a flat, you're worried or whatever.
It's you're always in shouting distance
you
flat of someone.
At the furthest point on the course, you walk 2 minutes and like, you're fine. Right. You're not going to get attacked by a bear. Whatever your worries are about racing are just, they don't exist for cross. It's just an easy entry. You can wear whatever you want, race whatever you want. It's a piece of cake. And I think, Nika is definitely also super inviting because the beginning races are super mellow, but the varsity races are super competitive. You know, you have the whole spectrum on there, and there's been tons of good kids come out of Nika, especially the NorCal league, like Nielsen Palace. I remember racing him. He was never in the front group in the varsity race, and he is just smashing it now.
Right.
Like, you can watch the races he's in every day, and you're just like, you just have so much faith in the guy. You're like, I know he's going to do it. He's going to win or just crush these guys. So he was there. Sean Bennett was there, who's on Action.
Sure.
Did some high school racing. Just a ton of good guys came out of there and actually, you know, professional paid cyclists now, which is pretty cool.
So from the first, you know, days on the Rigid 29er, when did you sort of, what was the progression? When were you like, hey, this is something I'm good at? And then even from there, hey, this is something maybe I should really put all my concentration towards.
Yeah. So from that point, I think I did the first couple races on that Rigid 29er. That was only a single speed, though. And then eventually I got one of the local guys who used to work with the team gave me a red line to use, a real cross bike, or let me borrow it. And I just remember getting on that bike. I hated it. You know, it was so scary. Like, the brakes don't work. The tires deflect off of everything.
And not coming from road, I mean, it's a whole different geometry. You got, like, the drop bars, like, everything.
Everything, right? Like, you want to ride the drops all the time because that's the only place you feel safe. Or your hands aren't going to fall off the bars. And, the brakes are just old cantilever brakes. It's an old Scandium frame. I mean, I think it was pretty...
I remember that bike.
I think it was a pretty nice bike, though. It had some Durace pieces on it. So, did that race. And I think one day, I think it was the first time I took that bike to the race, I could do the junior race and the Bs. So it was A, B, C for the age categories.
Right, yeah, back before the day when we had 15 different categories.
Yeah,
of
before,
ages,
exactly. Yeah. It was eight, and then maybe there was some age group breakdowns in there, but I remember my dad and I, we wanted to do two races, the juniors, and then line up again and do the Bs. And I think that was the first day I showed up with that cross bike. And I remember we changed kits too. We're like, we should change kits so they don't know that you won the junior race. You know, just being total dorks about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, super. Exactly. So then, I think I did okay in the Bs, and then a week or two later, I won the juniors and the Bs, and it was like, okay, this is going well. And then the next season, just did As only with some junior racing, and then the As, and that's an hour of just getting smoked. You know,
that's
even
a
locally.
Big jump.
And there's a lot of good guys in the Bay Area. The Ben and Andy Jock Mann were still racing.
Oh, awesome,
Justin Robinson. Aaron Bradford, so a bunch of fast guys, and just getting floored by those guys, not even close, but like, you know, you make those incremental jumps every single year, and eventually you're close to the front, and maybe instead of going for top 10, you're going for top 5, then top 3, then win, and that doesn't happen fast. It happens over maybe a year every time. So I made those jumps, and then eventually it was just saw Cal Giant in the area with all the cool bikes and the good looking kits and running the coolest equipment and doing well in these races. And it was like sights were set on getting on Cal Giant. And eventually, yeah, that happened. Eventually, I think I helped it Specialized for a summer. I built demo bikes for them and they gave me a frame. And then Cal Giant gave me some components to kind of build it. And I think I was doing okay locally. I was starting to win some of the A races, which doesn't really mean too much is when you go from winning A races locally to a UCI.
Sure, but it's good building
scale, block. A decent indication of where things might be. And then I was sitting in high school. I think it was 10th grade or junior year. And Cal Giant, I'd been talking to the manager. He probably just thought I was super annoying. You know, can I have this? Can I have that? I want to be on your team, blah, blah, blah. But they did give me some bits to build the bike and an old kit. But that was kind of it. And I hadn't really talked to him too much. And I got a ticket in my email to go to Louisville.
Oh, wow.
Just cool. A ticket. Yeah. He just sent me a ticket. And I was like, that's for the, you know, the USGP UCI junior race. And yeah, I got that ticket. And I'm like, well, sweet. But like, I haven't talked to my parents. I don't know if I can miss school. Like, I don't, you know, I was stoked. I was showing my friends next to me, but I'm using my phone in class too. You know, right. So like trying to be low key about it. And then went to that race. And it was a lot of the same guys, actually. It was Logan Owen, Curtis White, Zane Godby, who's not racing anymore,
sure, yeah.
And Drew Dillman. Those were kind of the competitors. And I think the first day I was fourth, and then the next day I was second out there. And I think that was good enough for Anthony on Cal Giant, the manager, to say, you know, he's competitive. And then from there on, I was going to everything, and I was fully supported, which was rad.
That's great. Yeah, so sophomore, junior, and in high school, really just sort of on the way.
Yeah.
And from there, where does it, because teams in the U.S. have gotten so weird.
And yeah, totally. Yeah,
you know, we came from a day, you know, in Cannondale Cyclocross World, you know, Stu's still out there doing his thing, has that program that's been going on.
Tons of respect
forever.
For that. It's awesome. Yeah.
And we've seen others come and go. You know, you're a guy, I think, a decade ago would definitely have been fully supported on a larger team.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think without a doubt, but that environment doesn't seem to exist anymore. So what was the process to get to where you are now and to be able to be out here doing all of these races?
Well, I mean, being on the Cal Giant, which was basic, I mean, it was a parallel program to Cannondale, right? Like,
right,
we had
for
the
sure.
full Specialized setup, we had the sprinter, we had all that, and there was a lot of teams like that. And the only reason I got on that team was because I was local, basically, for them. The other guys weren't as local. I mean, Cody Kaiser was on the team, and he was, but I was on that team. I did well as a junior. U23s, I would do well, and when it was a U23 race, you know, I'd be on the podium or whatever. But those first, I'd say, 2 or 3 years as a U23, like, I was not doing well. But I was, Cal Giant was still a team, and I was, maybe it's because I was local or Anthony liked me or whatever, but I was there. But I was there with teammates like Yannick and Logan, who were competing for top fives and wins at these races, while I'm back there like getting my teeth kicked in for top 20. So I look back on that, I'm just like forever grateful that I was kept on the team,
yeah,
and supported to go to these races and understand how the calendar works, because I was never doing that well. And then every once in a while I'd crack off a result or whatever. And then the last year I was on Cal Giant, it was my last year, U23, and I was able to win nationals that year. And that year things were going well. Like, I had made a jump. I was starting to be super competitive. And
was there anything specific that you think that you changed? Was it training? Was it mindset? Or was it just, it just finally clicked in and happened?
I think it clicked. I think it was mindset. I think, I was like, this is the year, you got to make it happen. I don't think there's not a correlation between me buying a scooter and starting to do well.
Yeah.
You know, just ponied up $1,400 to buy a scooter to motor pace. And my dad would take me out all the time on that. Still does. Same scooter. It's got a roller across the back. That's always our joke. That was the year like things started to go better.
Were you racing road at all at that point?
And I was also on the Cal Giant road team.
Okay.
And I think that a couple years of cross were probably compromised by a massive road schedule.
Okay. Did you ever think that road was going to be the future for you?
You know, I didn't like, I always saw myself as a cross racer, but like I did well in some road races. Yeah. I don't know, what are they called? Now they're called some...
Like the NRC races?
NRC, yeah. I mean, I won a couple... I've won a stage of like NRC stage races, a crit or so, of lots of top threes, like white jersey a couple times. So I don't think that was... I always saw that as something I used for cross. Even at those races, I would identify myself as a cross racer. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't like the vibe of the road. Like,
interesting.
Talking about the numbers and the climbs, and it seemed kind of clicky.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because, you know, having like Logan on the same team, where it seemed like even though he was doing awesome in cross, that it was always going to be the road.
Yeah, and I don't know, road. It seems like for road, it's like these guys that are into it and doing well, and the clickiness bit are these guys that started doing road when they were really young, and all of it was still so new to me that I still didn't know. So I was like, well, I'm a cross guy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think I did road with Cal Giant, one of the best road teams in the country, for, you know, that you could be on for development, and was on that. And one year did like a bunch of stage races, just started with Redlands, then Gila, then North Star, and then Cascade, then went to Europe with the national team. So that was like February to August, and then did cross, and just had a bad season that year because I never got any rest, you know.
Right.
But I think that was like a building year. Like, you to put all that volume and all that race volume, you see that payoff after some rest. So I think it was maybe the next year that I did do well, because I had that, and I actually got a legit season to take a break, and yeah.
Yeah, and that even, I think all of that road and your success on the road is, you know, not to, well, you probably know, give away what your competitors usually say about you, is that they don't want to go to the end of the race with you.
Yeah.
Because you got that power, and you have a good opportunity of being able to out-sprint them.
Yeah, totally. And that was when I would win, you know, the crit stage. It was just a big sprint at the end, so... Yeah, it's definitely a good tool to have in the back pocket. I don't know if that comes from, you know, road or if it just also you look at us domestically racing, like, I'm the biggest guy there. So hopefully I could put out the best sprint, you know, like maybe that's all I got going for me with the size and everything. Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to be a topic you want to talk, but talk about the size, you know, your nickname, your Twitter, the McTubbin.
Oh, yeah.
And then even putting out that picture, you know, from you growing up.
Totally.
Was this always like, was weight a struggle for you? Was it something that you, or was that just who you were?
Who I was. Yeah. Like, when I was that age, I think that I did see my, like, it was never a problem, right? I don't think I ever really, it never bothered me. But same thing, when I started racing that first year, I was traveling with Cal Giant. I was around, I mean, one of the guys is my best friend now, who was the mechanic on the team. He still lives in Santa Cruz. A couple other guys that work at Specialized. Yeah, I think that on the first big trip with them during the summer to go to Mountain Bike Nationals, I drove from Santa Cruz to Sun Valley, Idaho, and I was just hanging out with the Specialized team. Basically, this wasn't so much Cal Giant as much as it was Specialized Factory. So I was with, like, you know, Leah Davison. Jordy's the mechanic for her, who's now one of my good friends. Not Leah, Jordy. And I think I was just kind of lazy on the trip. You know, I was there to race, but the name Tubbin and McTubbin came about then, you know? And I wasn't even, like, if you look back on the picture of me being little, I was definitely, like, chubby then. But it wasn't like I was when I got the nickname. But the nickname just stuck. And there was, like... variations, Tubbin, McTubbin, Tubblepagus, you know, they're all over the place. But McTubbin stuck. And then I don't know. I just kind of embraced it.
Yeah, no, like, that's awesome.
Whatever.
I love it.
You can't choose your nickname, you
right,
know?
Exactly.
So yeah, now that's stayed and that's stuck, and yeah, nothing I can do now.
Yeah. Growing up in California, West Coast, racing on the West Coast, especially cyclocross, and I think you and I actually may have had a little friction over this as well.
Charm City.
Yeah. about my East Coast bias.
Yeah.
And seeing you as this underdog, and you were like, not an underdog.
Yeah.
You know, I'm national champion, all this other thing. But that's kind of the mind when we're here and we have the majority of the races on this side. That's kind of all we see. We honestly forget about the West Coast, and it's wrong to do.
Yeah.
Does that motivate you at all? I mean, is that kind of something that's in your head?
Yeah, it does for sure motivate me. I wish that, I wish we had a heavy scene on the West Coast, and we have in the past with, we just have in the past. I don't know what it is, why it's not there. Chris and I talk about this all the time. Like, why is it thriving UCI wise on the East Coast, and we have like one race on the West Coast?
Especially when it UCI wise, everything else, it got its start in California.
Yeah, totally. So what happened? You know, like, is it not cool to, you know, try super hard? And is it cool just go to enduro? Like, we think about this stuff and we talk about it. Like, enduro looks a lot more appealing to go do than cross, you know, or cross country, because you get to wear the cool clothes and it's fun to go downhill. And I'd be interested to see, like, if you compared West Coast versus East Coast on like an enduro schedule, is the western part of the country maybe better at that? Because
I think absolutely, yeah.
So I think maybe that's just what we're surrounded by, yeah, out there now. And on the East Coast, it's still just like, you know, oh, it's cool to go out there and try hard, race hard, put all your effort into it.
So here's a, just based on what you're saying, here's a theory I'm coming up with right now.
Yeah.
That it's kind of incremental, in that we talked about how cyclocross was a good point of entry for racing because it wasn't road. So it used to, yeah, be everybody raced road, and then there was cyclocross, which was shorter and was on grass,
laid
and it
back,
seemed like it was more fun.
Yeah.
Now road is, sorry, people race road, it's kind of dying.
For
you
sure.
Know, not as many amateurs racing road.
Yeah.
Now a lot more racing cyclocross. Now the thing is like, oh, all the serious people are racing cyclocross. So now it's almost like moving,
yeah,
down for the next thing that's, you
totally,
know, below that.
And I don't want to discount the efforts of any enduro racer.
Oh, no,
right?
They're like, amazing.
They're amazing athletes. I just think maybe it's a good theory, like you have, right? If you look at this scale, maybe road was at the top of that. It's hard to get into, and maybe that just got pushed off the edge now, and cross got shuffled up to that spot of, yeah, it's maybe a little more intimidating. And then there's enduro, where like,
right,
you're out there alone. Same thing, kind of short stages, right? You're never really out there too far. There's always people coming by. Because, you know, you're going in timed runs. Maybe,
right, right,
maybe that is the new,
yeah,
entry
and
level.
You get to chill out between each one.
And you get to relax and talk with your friends. I mean, it is fun. I've done,
yeah,
enduro racing. It's a good time. So, yeah, that makes sense. And maybe that's something we're seeing on the West Coast versus East Coast.
Yeah, yeah. And it is something that I think that with the popularity of cyclocross, it's another theme I kind of come back to, is that we, if we love the sport, especially on the amateur level, have to be vigilant about it, because, yeah, it's popular now, but I think it's starting to plateau a little bit. And I always talk to people who think it's going to keep growing and growing and growing. And I say, hey, go talk to somebody, probably like your dad, go talk to somebody who raced mountain bikes like in the 90s.
Yeah.
It was like never going away, and it was huge, and it was like the biggest thing ever. And,
yeah,
now, you know.
Yeah, and my dad definitely, I mean, he kind of started racing when I did, so he,
okay,
wasn't like big bike racer, but,
yeah,
you know, Chris, my coach, he talks about it. He's like, man, there was 10 guys making six figures,
right,
and just killing it, and now, boom, like, whoa, where did that go? And, yeah, maybe I don't know, maybe like we're talking about the teams, these big teams in cross, maybe I don't know who was making what and how many riders there were making a nice salary and whatnot, but hopefully we're not seeing that happen with cross.
Right.
It doesn't seem like we are. It just seems like there's a shuffle of how you can get to all these races and be competitive. You don't, maybe you don't need that massive setup, and you can, you know, set your budget at the beginning of the year, say, hey, I actually only need, you know, X out of that budget to get to all these races, and then I can pay myself a legit salary instead of having a massive presence there.
Like, what are you in? Are you, what's your vehicle? What are you driving up to Rochester?
We're in a Dodge Caravan. It's real nice.
Yeah.
And that is an upgrade for us. The first year.
Last year, even.
Yeah. First year and last year. I mean, like, I think last year we started to get it pretty figured out. I was like, we need a minivan. But, you know, I'm doing all the logistics and booking cars and flights, and like the midsize SUV on there is like a RAV4 or whatever.
Right.
And you can fit all of our stuff, I think, because we did it. In those cars without wheels on, and it's just a pain for Chris to load and unload.
Sure.
And then, we got, so now minivans are the way to go. You know, you can go weekend to weekend, throw all the bags in there, because you have an empty bike case, you have two wheel bags, you have luggage. So that's definitely an upgrade. And this year, I think Santa Cruz is getting more engaged with it. So you will see this year a big legit setup at more races, because Santa Cruz is coming out to do that with us, which is super cool.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, you know, it's also kind of a testament, like, you don't need that massive setup to do well. It sucks when it's bad weather and that's it, but otherwise it's like we have that minivan, we work in and out of that, we can kind of be incognito and just show up to the start line and do well, and just focus. Chris and I just focus on what we are doing, and it's easy. One thing I don't like about that setup is, like, it's hard for me to brand this program and pitch sponsors when we don't have that massive setup to be
right,
you know, passing out posters, stickers, whatever
the,
that might
whole
be
marketing, the marketing side thing of it is more difficult, and you know, that is something that I think people do look at. But no, I appreciate it. I used to, you know, I'd see the White family do it as well sometime. I mean, on, you know, full support with the whole Cannondale blow up tents, and then I know a couple of years they'd show up at Charm City with like a U-Haul, like a little mini U-Haul, and the whole family in there,
and you can do that, you know. I think, don't, for anybody that's out there, I mean, you can do it. It's totally, you can be competitive, you can win races, you don't need that massive setup. It just, it'll take a little bit of refinement, but once you get it, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's something, along with you know, not having the salaries, not having the support. I think it's something that European riders don't appreciate about North American riders, that, like you're saying, you're doing all the logistics, you're basically your own team manager.
Yeah, totally.
And that's got to take time. I mean, I know, talking to Powers in the past, that's something that he's sort of struggled with as well, having to do all of that and then go train, go race.
Totally. And Powers was definitely my, I mean, I was like, well, you know, Powers is doing this. I mean, Powers is doing the privateer thing with the, I shouldn't say privateer.
He was like the deluxe level.
The
privateer.
Deluxe privateer, right? I mean, I think someone who actually did the privateer thing, the first person in the United States who doesn't get credit for it and is overlooked, is Cody Kaiser.
Sure.
Was the first person, and he and I talk about it. He's always like, man, everyone's doing this now. I've been doing this for years. I'm like, I'm like, dude, I know you've been doing it for years, you know? Because he graduated from Cal Giant. Because it was just a U23 team, and didn't have the, probably just didn't quite have the results to make that jump to like the team setup where there were a bunch of these big teams, because that climate was still kind of thriving a bit when he went off. And Cody just said, I'm going to do my own thing, and pooled together some money, some bikes, some sponsors, and did it. And then, it was at all the races, and you know, I respect him for doing that. Totally, totally did well and killed it. So when I was done with Cal Giant, I knew that it was possible because Cody done it. There's a couple other people doing it. And now I don't know if people are just seeing success of a maybe the privateer setup, but I think it's more tangible than ever to do this.
Well, it's also, it's what I see with a lot of stuff I do as well is, you keep that over, it's exactly what you said. It's you keep the overhead low. You are basically a small business owner.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And you want to be able to live off that. So you are really watching expenses and have a sort of a lean system now.
Super lean, super efficient. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy because there's times as when you're booking stuff that, just pay more for it. It's worth it. And same thing as I mature as an athlete. At first I was like, I don't want to pay for massage or this body work or this mental, these things are expensive, but it's an investment in yourself,
Right.
So there are these expenses that you do need to just suck it up and pay for. And it after the fact, it's like, whoa, I really benefited from that. And then I don't know if that was kind of a tangent, but
no, tangents are good.
Yeah, that was kind of a tangent. But same thing when we're booking, when I'm booking tickets and looking at getting our stuff to races, it's like, okay, if I save $100 there, save what here, save that there. I mean, that goes into my bottom line, right? Like my salary can be a lot bigger by saving money in all these other spots throughout the year.
Yeah.
And Chris gets mad at me sometimes for that. But I think now we've reached a nice middle ground where we always have minivans. They cost exponentially more, but it's easy, right? Just suck it up, pay it, whatever. Yeah.
You mentioned Chris a couple times. How did that relationship come about? Because you guys are, you're sort of this team, the two of you,
totally.
And it's traveling together, and you don't see that in these privateers. You don't really see that arrangement as much.
Yeah, Chris, it's funny. So he and I got he's been coaching me for maybe 6 or 7 years, long time. And I was on a high school team with a high school coach, not someone that wasn't really he just probably read the coaching book and sure. wanted to help the kids out or whatever. So I was doing that. And then when I got on Cal Giant, Anthony sent me a list of names. He's like, here's some coaches. You need a real coach. So I saw Chris McGovern's name on there and I just called him once and I was like, yeah, I'll go with you, whatever. I didn't even call the other guys. Right. Yeah. And I think I recognized the name. Maybe we were friends on Facebook or something. So yeah, he'd been coaching me for a while, met him at some local time trial. And things just went from there. Chris is definitely, we've just got a really good dynamic. Things just work well. He's definitely, shaped who I am as a cyclist. It's okay to try hard. You should try hard. Put your best foot forward. Don't half-ass anything. And I'm super grateful that I got lined up with him as a coach instead of maybe someone who's like, oh yeah, nah, it's fine. Maybe don't do this, do that. Chris is like, no, do this. Don't do that. That's BS. Why are you doing that? And I think from the beginning, I always had the coach was the ultimate authority. So I just did what they said, whether it sucked, it didn't suck.
I like that too. I think that's a really important factor of coaching is accountability.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell you what to do. Tell you how it is. You do it. It works. It maybe doesn't work right away, but eventually it works.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did that. He lives in Nevada City, which is a 3-hour drive from Santa Cruz, 3.5-hour drive. Unfortunately, it's not super close, but I go up there and hang out a lot now. So yeah, started as a coach client thing. And then he was around on Cal Giant. And I think sometimes he saw the atmosphere with all these riders and was like, man, we could make a better atmosphere for you. Let's do this thing alone. And, he was a big part of just helping me with the privateer setup. He's always kind of taught me if you want to do something, just do it. You got to try it. You can't just talk about it. And I think, I'm really glad that he pushed me on that and always has is just do it. It's a decision you have to make. If you fail, whatever, it doesn't matter.
I love that approach. I see that a lot too with, stuff I've tried where people are like, oh, how do you get into doing this or that?
Yeah.
Like, just do it.
Totally. Or you're like, you're not happy doing it this way, but you're kind of scared. Just do it. You know, yeah. you can't fail. Or if you fail, whatever, you go back to it. But yeah. You're never going to succeed if you don't try it, is more what I'm trying to get at. So yeah, he and I now definitely best friends. Just hang out. That's like awesome. We're glad cross season's here. We get to hang out every weekend. And yeah, the season is here, so now we're back together rolling around at all these races, and it's just a good setup. And we're total nerds like with the bike stuff. We're not nerds with like the power number stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, we look at it, but it's like I don't have great power numbers. I never have. But all these numbers people talk about are so road centric. You know, what's your 20 minute number? Does it matter for cyclocross? Like, you're never going up a 20 minute climb.
Sure.
Yeah. So like we never got caught up in these numbers as much as like looking at a course, looking at a cross race and studying it like
it's almost more like
football
a
coach would do.
It's like a holistic approach to cyclocross instead of just, you know, trying to be more.
Totally. Yeah, or like looking at a football coach looks at plays and he's like, we're going to switch this up. Chris is like, okay, I've been looking at this course or that course. You'd be like, you need to be able to hit it for 30 seconds, 20 times or something. So let's train that effort. Let's like, why are we trying to train a 20 minute number when that's not something that's super usable?
I love that. You're talking my language now, because that's what I love. That's why I was like doing those Svennis videos, whatever. It's all like the tactics. It's all the strategy. It's looking at the course or trying to figure out how you can best take advantage of that.
Of just
save energy.
Subtle little bits here and there. And that's really his approach, my approach. That's why we work well together. And then, like getting to the nerdy stuff, looking at the bikes, the tires. We just switched tire companies, which is really nice. And we have the same gauge at every race, playing with half PSI differences.
Wow, yeah.
And bike setup and trying different things, you know. And he's like, he's out there watching me. It's another unique thing we have. He's my coach and my mechanic, so he sees everything from the pit, which is pretty awesome. And he can be like, hey, it looked like you were struggling here, you weren't doing this very well, you were doing that well, let's change that. And I think that's another unique thing he and I have that a lot of people maybe don't. They have the coach might not be at the bike race.
Right, for sure. Yeah, you see that a lot. Everybody finishes a race, you can walk around the pits and you'll see everybody on the phone because they're talking to their coach.
This is how it went versus like he and I come back together. I jump on the rollers. You know, we have this thing called the one bottle rule. Once you finish whatever bottle you get at the finish line or whatever, once that's finished, you can't be negative anymore if the race doesn't go well.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So usually that one bottle, if the race doesn't go well, you drink that bottle, whatever you want to do, right? You want to mope about, try not, you know, you never mope about it. Just be like a little frustrated. But once that bottle's gone, it's always back to the drawing board. Like, okay, what didn't go well? What did go well? Even when I win a race, it's still like, I think I could have done this better or that better. It's always, Chris always wants more, which, it's cool and it's good to have that influence, but he always wants more. So even when you win, you're like, damn it, dude, like, come on. Like, I just won. Like, give me a break. Yeah. And every once in a while I just get like, so when Chris is complimentary, it's just like the ultimate thing. Yeah.
And I think that what I see is that, you know, you were talking before even about, you know, your experience in other sports and just sort of coming into the first time you are at the high school mountain bike practice and wanting to win the interval. So you have this like strong competitive drive. I think that looking at Chris and also his other clients, what he instills in them, which I really like, you have a confidence too. I think it's really like, we've done the work, this is it, and you are, you know, you're good and you can go out there and you can succeed. And I think that maybe that sort of West Coast stuff, you know, not sort of fitting in with the East Coast thing, and then plus that confidence is a dynamic that I've really enjoyed seeing in the racing, because I think you come in there and you kind of, you know, upset things a little bit, especially at the front of a race. Yeah. You know, I was talking about like people wanting to get away from you because they don't want to go to the finish.
Yeah.
I think that cyclocross in the last, you know, after Saturn, the Saturn guys left, and after, you know, even like Tim Johnson and that yeah. whole era, it got a little nice.
Yeah.
And it was kind of just, and maybe Powers had a little to do with that because he was kind of off the front there for a couple of years, and it was just chasing him down. Mm-hmm. Like the last couple of years with you in there and Hyde and Werner and all those guys at the front, it's got a little more of an edge to it.
Yeah.
And I know you guys are all friends off the course, but on good. The course, it's good. And yeah. it has made watching these races so much more fun.
And it should be like that, I think. Yeah, I'm glad. It's funny you've observed that, because I would totally agree. Like, off the bike, everyone's amicable. We're all friends. But on the bike, like, we are hitting each other hard sometimes, and no one's holding back out there, because I think that we all think we're the best.
Yeah,
you know. And that's why the racing's been so good, because everyone, it's not like you said, like that, those two couple years where Powers would just dominate. It was like anyone can win. And we all think we're the best, and it just makes it crazy out there, because no one's intimidated by anybody, which is, it's pretty crazy. So,
yeah. And this year, you know, that's why Rochester is going to be fun. You know, we'll see Hyde out there. We'll see Powers out there. And then even guys like Drew Dillman coming back and racing, I think he's going to be somebody that may be up there with you. Spencer, you know, last year was just sort of his coming out party, and now up there banging yeah. elbows with everyone.
There's a lot of, Chris and I are talking about this too, driving over here. There's a lot of guys. It could be a totally different scene this year. You know, it's plenty of new guys. Not new. Spence isn't new.
But, but
he just might have that extra 1% or 2% and really be a factor. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting year again because of that. And even some Gage, you know, whenever he takes his break from the road and comes back, is going to be hard to beat.
I saw the success of Gage this year on the road, and he may completely disagree with this. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I was like, oh, it was really nice having a Gage in cyclocross, but I think that's done now.
Yeah, I think that too. Same thing. I'm just like, oh, there goes another one. Yep. You know, so we'll see where he ends up. Hopefully doesn't get pulled from us too bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. See, who else was I? There's another younger guy who is starting to mix it up too. I'm spacing on his name. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be the old guy, not the old guys, but us.
Yeah, you old guys at 23.
Yeah, there's going to be us from last year, and there's going to be some new guys coming out of U23 who are good and a threat for sure.
Which is, I think, helps everyone. And we
always
need that
good.
And we need it, and it'll continue to push the sport forward. And then, you know, when everybody does go to Belgium, I think that is another part where I'm going to call it nastiness in the best way.
Yeah.
But that's what you're dealing with there, right? I mean, you get these European races and they're just elbows out and there's a lot of pushing and shoving. If that kind of racing is more in the US, then I think you guys have a better chance of succeeding once you're overseas.
Yeah. I think just raising the level, right? Harder racing, more fitness, more guys just going for it. If it raises the collective level, you can never go wrong with that. It's always a good thing. So we got to keep that keep that in mind. It's good for everybody.
And now, you know, if you just lean into Kerry a little bit, it'll go down.
Yeah, easy, just a little.
that's poor, to check to see if he
guy.
Ever listens to this.
Poor guy. Yeah. Oh. That was
rough.
rough day out there for Kerry.
Yeah, he made it up for it.
But also not really.
Yeah, he still won. Yeah, in the end, it was okay. Nationals. It seemed like Reno. I don't know. I don't know if we really chatted after that, but it didn't. Obviously, the race you didn't won because you were in it to win it.
Yeah.
So what happened there and anything? And, you know, I'm assuming that's still a goal for this year coming up.
Yeah, it's absolutely a goal. I think last year I wanted to win. I mean, I had won so many races last year and I was like, okay, Nationals, I can do this. And I got to the course and I was like, wow, this course is like this is a good course for me.
Yeah, that whole uphill, just, like after the start, the sort of falls flat power section. Yeah, seemed just like it was, yeah.
Power. Like I'm like, okay, I can. There's nowhere that like someone could just drop me here, right? I was like, wow, I could either drop them, but I don't think they're gonna drop me. And you know, back pocket, I have that sprint I can always work on. I was looking at the finish. I'm like, okay, I got to be first through here, a little hit the brakes hard there, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then in the race, I think maybe Powers and Hyde didn't want to take me to the line again. And
I know that for a fact.
Yeah, was in it to win it full throttle and just set that pace higher than I could comfortably maneuver anything in. In his altitude training probably helped. That I was just, the altitude was just killing me. And yeah, I think with, I don't know if we did a 7-lap race or a 6-lap race, but I was probably there for the first 2/3 of the race. And the first third, I was like, okay, this is going to hurt, like it always does. And then that second third, you settle in. Then the last third, it's like you start figuring out how you're going to make the win happen. And the second, third, and even the first third, I was like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do this today in my head, right? I'm thinking this. Usually in the race, I'm like, hey, this is the spot where you're going to make your move. This is where you put yourself in position to win. But I was hurting so bad that I was just like, wow, okay, how are you going to put this together today? Because right now, it's not in your control like it usually is. Eventually I just got popped and I was just out there alone. Like, wow, I just got popped and now I'm holding on, but I'm so cracked, you know, because I wasn't in there. I wasn't out there to get third or
sure,
whatever. Right. I think if I was gunning for third, I probably could have just landed a spot on the podium, but I was like, they're going now. Kerry just popped. Curtis just popped. Like I'm just hold on and then beat these guys. And so I was, and then I cracked, and I was just like, when I cracked, it was bad. I just went backwards, and Kerry was coming back up, and I'm like, man, I don't know how. I'm not going to be able to hold off Kerry. If he gets up here, I'm dead. I just gave it everything. So, yeah, fourth place was it's fourth at Nationals. It's okay, right? Like, it's nothing to complain about, but I was disappointed because that would have been the cherry on top of the season. And yeah, I think it's probably better to go out that way than to like lose the sprint. Right. At least I wasn't even close, but, yeah, it was a rough day out there. I was super bummed.
What do you think about that, Pan Am course, which will be Nationals this year?
Louisville. I'm thrilled with that. Yeah. Because I think it's just got everything. Like it's, yeah. If for me, if the course isn't like a tactical race, I'd rather just have it be super hard, you know, like on a race like this past weekend, it's a lot of flat, a lot of up and down on the pace. Guys are super fresh when you attack, everyone can go with, right? Versus like the Pan Am course is so hard that if you can just get up that climb first, everyone's already on the edge. And if you can attack, then it's not like it's not like you're going to stretch it out, then have it snap back together like a rubber band. It's just carnage. Like if you can attack, guys are just blowing up because it's so hard. I like that.
Yeah.
Because it changes the tactics a bit. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fun event.
It's going to be a fun event.
Going to make some changes with at least the start finish. So it's all kind of in that fun area.
Yeah.
In the back,
that'd be good. And the course is just really good course.
Yeah.
And it was great conditions last year. And I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. There's some places that they have Nationals where I'm not as stoked on, but I'm pretty stoked that it's in Louisville.
Yeah, it'll be good. Awesome. All right. Dude, this was a great conversation. Thank you. Thanks glad for. I'm glad we've been talking about it for a while.
I'm glad we put it together.
Yeah, we finally were able to do it. So good luck this weekend in Rochester. And I guess I'll see you in a few days.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks, Bill. See you out there.
There you have it. Tobin Ortenblad. Give him a follow on social media at McTubbin. Just like we were talking about, McTubbin. I believe that's for Twitter and for Instagram. Follow along with his season. Also follow along with the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, which you can become a member by going to wideanglepodium.com. Support the show. support the Slow Ride podcast, Consummate Athletes, the whole network. We need your help. We want your help. We want you to be part of the community. This is the time to do it. The fidget spinners, the t-shirts, the shout outs, the splash proof phone pouch, buttons. We got a lot of stuff that we want to give to you, but we can only do it if you become a member. You also get bonus content. Also remember about CX is Boss. That's where you're going to get those sweet FMB tubulars and also water bottles and shirts, bar tape, everything that you need for to get off to a good start in your cyclocross season. Go to cxisboss.com/radio. Put in the coupon code radio and you're all set. You're ready to go. Finally, Charm City Cyclocross and DC CX. I want you all to register for those two races. I want to see you in the Mid-Atlantic. I want to see you in the DC area for the Parkway CX Trophy presented by Union Craft Brewery. That's our new series. We're really excited about it. We got some cool stuff planned, but you have to be there for the race. That's the important part. If you've never done Charm City, amazing course, amazing venue. Same with DCCX, two gems that we want you not to miss. And then this series is something great. It's a four-day series. That's it, four races, in and out. Anybody can do that. You can make that your season goal to do well in this series. Come back for next year, try to improve in the same series. Go to bikereg.com, register for Charm City. And also for DCCX, it's October 6 and 7 for Charm City, October 20 and 21 for DCCX. Hope to see you all there. Follow along with me at CX Hairs on Twitter, on Instagram, cxhairs.com. I will have all of the content posted up there. But if you just want to go straight to the video recaps, I will be doing all season long, starting with GoCross, which is already up there. Just go to crosshairstelevision.com. That'll take you straight to the YouTube page, and then you can just subscribe to the YouTube channel, and that will get you all the videos as they come up, so you know what everybody's talking about when they're talking about North American cyclocross. All right, I'm gonna head to Rochester, and we'll talk to you all soon.